Kentucky Psychologist, a podcast brought to you by the Kentucky Psychological Association. The Kentucky Psychologist will get into the minds of top psychologists from Kentucky and occasionally friends from across the country. We'll talk about what leading mental health experts are interested in and excited about. Hear about all the ways psychologists in clinical practice, research, leadership, and applied settings are doing to improve and save lives.
Thank you all for joining us today on this episode of the Kentucky Psychologist. Today, our special guest is Dr. AJ Steele. Dr. Steele, can you give us a quick introduction about yourself, like where your workplace is, what you do for work now, and then what your position is with KPA?
Yeah. Hi, everybody. I am currently semi-retired. Some folks call me semi-retiring because I haven't quite got that process down yet. So I am doing some KPA board supervision. So I keep a full slate of supervisees. And then I do some consulting and some curriculum development and training. I'm also the program director for the Integrated Behavioral Health Services for rehab providers. And that's a certification program for physical therapists and occupational therapists and other medical providers that provide treatment for pain or chronic pain. So trying to bring psychological concepts into working with the whole client when they're experiencing pain. So I also see a few clients on the side. So that's about it.
Yep. And then what is your position with KPA?
I am currently the president-elect, and so I'm excited about being able to have the opportunity to work with people that, you know, we have such a great organization. So I'm excited to see where we can go.
That's super exciting. Yeah, it's interesting to hear about your career path now. I'm happy that you're semi-retiring and when you fully retire, but we're not there yet, so we don't have to think about those things.
Not yet.
All right. So while we're in the realm of KPA, what initially brought you into KPA?
I think probably like a whole lot of other people, as a student in 1995, I wanted to attend the conference at the student rate. And so I did that. And then I really was so really excited about the people that I met and the opportunities and the inclusiveness that they were. Some of the old timers, if you will, were very inclusive with students and, you know, wanting to make sure that they were, you know, building for the future. And so that just kind of fit for me. I'm a old athlete and love teamwork. And so enjoy that kind of camaraderie of a team. And I saw that that's what the KPA was and just wanted to be a part of that.
I love hearing that you were involved as a student and then look at you now as president-elect. Look at the
trajectory. Yeah. I'm sure some of the professors are going, oh my goodness.
All right. So what is something that, or maybe like your deciding factor on to pursue psychology?
Oh, I think, you know, I have this kind of winding road to psychology. I started my undergrad as an art major and was thinking about doing art education and maybe doing some coaching, maybe not. And then I had my first semester of undergrad and decided that I didn't really care for the art professors. And so thought, well, what am I going to do now? I think part of it was that I wanted, you know, when you do art, I do it for myself. I don't, you know, when it being graded and things like that, I'm like, and I'm enough of a rebel that I didn't really like the art professors telling me exactly what colors to use and things like that. So I decided that I would shift my major. And so I actually was sitting in the undergrad library and looking, I was in the psychology section and I didn't even know that. And so saw a book about sport psychology. So I decided at that point that I would develop my own program at undergrad. So I did an interdisciplinary major in sports sciences and psychology. And so I've always been one of those, if it's not there, what can we do to build it? And so I did graduated with my bachelor's there. Then I went to Michigan State and I have a master's in health and human performance with a focus on sports psychology. Well, mind you, that was back in 1990 and sports psychology wasn't exactly a hot topic. You know, folks didn't even really know what it was. And then, of course, I did some more reading, understanding that you couldn't call yourself a psychologist unless you had a doctoral degree. So that became my next goal. And so I ended up at Spalding and did my master's and doctorate in clinical psych. And so it's like all my life is a circle now, because working with the company I do, Evidence in Motion, is working on pain and rehab of the athlete. And that's what my master's thesis back at Michigan State was on. And so on one hand, I strayed a little bit, but came back to that. So I guess I've always been curious with how people work and how to help others. So, you know, that standard, oh, I want to help others.
Yeah. I'm realizing the more interviews I do that most people's paths aren't linear.
Exactly.
To getting to psychology. So it's super interesting to hear, you know, where you've come from and like where it's put you today. And it's, like you said, it's a full circle moment for where you're working.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you kind of touched on that a little bit. But what, you know, challenges did you face, getting into, maybe was it to your master's program or maybe into your, you know, PsyD program? What challenges did you face like pursuing this career?
I think that you know, everybody faces different challenges. And you know, for me, I think it was not, I knew what I wanted to do, but I could see it in my head, but I didn't see it in the programs that I was in or what I was pursuing. And when I graduated with my undergrad degree, I actually went to the University of Iowa for a semester in their sports psychology program. But the head of the department took another job after the first semester. And so I ended up coming back home and then applying to Michigan State. And so, you know, going there. And then I had some health difficulties. And that's kind of a common theme for me. So that has been something that I've, you know, when I think about challenges, it's been how do I work with that and still achieve the things that I want to do. So I think that, you know, fortunately, as I have gotten older, I've gotten a little less stubborn about trying to practice self-care. So I think that some of those challenges are still there, but I'm doing a much better job.
I like that you're finding that, be more mindful. I think as people hear this, like, don't be so stubborn, be mindful about your body, listen to yourself and
exactly
forward with that. Don't
exactly. Yeah. You know, and I was a girl in the 1970s and actually was the first girl to play Little League in Northern Indiana. And so I was, you know, when you think about kids and athletes and that kind of stuff, it was a time when, of course, girls weren't supposed to play. And so I learned real young not to pay attention to my body. And so, you know, good and bad with that. I was able to develop some good athletic skills and determination and perseverance, but also, you know, coming up with the experiences that I had and you know, playing ball and that mantra of, you know, no pain, no gain, you know, and I kind of lived by that. But now I live by another mantra that is no pain, K-N-O-W, and no gain, K-N-O-W. So it's kind of, again, that full circle moment of, you know, I literally had no pain, no gain written in my locker all through college. I played ball. And now I'm focusing on helping others know how not to get caught up in the ignoring the body for the cost of winning or the cost of achievement.
I love how you shifted that mantra just by adding a couple letters in and that the meaning completely changes to it. Like, that's super powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, you know, that's, I can't claim that as my own original thought. That was in working with Evidence in Motion. That was one of the things that they talked about. And I saw that and I'm like, oh my gosh, it is. This is what I used to say, only in a different way.
Yeah. Turning something negative and making it positive.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of been the story of moving through my career. So it's, I think that's part of why I enjoy psychology so much, is knowing that people can achieve goals even when they're knocked down. That, you know, I used to have a poster that said, you know, success consists of getting up just one more time than you fall down. And so, you know, if you can just keep doing that and you know, learning to reach out to others to help yourself do that and not have our stubbornness keep us from that.
Yeah. Teamwork.
Yes, absolutely. Go team, go.
Yes. Well, perfect. So what is something right now that you're doing in psychology that is super exciting?
I think the biggest thing that I'm excited about is that I've had the opportunity to do some national conferences and talk about integrated behavioral health with pain sciences. And so I have spoken at, I was in San Diego this year. I was in San Antonio last year at the, it's the American Physical Therapy Association. And they have, it's their, it's like their APA, you know, so it's their national opportunity to get information out. And so I've had the opportunity to do that. And next Friday, I speak in Kansas City for the American Orthopedic Therapy Association. And so just the opportunity, I'm so excited to get the applied psychology into the world of healthcare. I think it, you know, goes back to my own personal struggles and, you know, trying to figure out ways to overcome that myself. And then, you know, how can I, you know, give back and help others? Because I see that it's such a struggle. You know, I have a lot of background and knowledge that should allow me to negotiate a system pretty well. However, it's very difficult for me. And if I think someone who has my background and my experiences has such a struggle to negotiate our healthcare system, it really bothers me that other folks aren't getting what they need. And so kind of my, you know, shout it from the mountaintops is holistic healthcare. How can we treat people as a whole instead of part and parcel them out? Because that doesn't work. And so that's what I'm really excited about.
Seeing you light up about that is super, like, that's so awesome that you're able to like get back and like really explain this applied psychology to these folks.
Yeah.
And
let them know, yeah. Like,
this is how it works.
Yeah.
That's awesome to hear.
It really, it's, you know, little did I know, I'm semi-retired because of medical issues. And so little did I know back in 2019 when I needed to make that decision that this opportunity would open up. And so I think that sometimes we fight against sometimes what we might think is something negative. And on one hand, it was negative. I did have to make a lot of changes and a lot of different challenges. But on the other hand, doors opened that I didn't even knew existed. And I had friends who knew friends who, you know, people called me. And so I think, you know, that's one of the things I like when I talk with students and supervisees and stuff is just keep your eyes and ears open to different possibilities. Don't get so stuck in one pathway that you don't see the rest of what could be possible. So, that and I do. I did forget on Monday I'm going down to Western Kentucky University and speak to a class for the doctor physical therapy program down there. So I just love being able to share and you know help others kind of reach what they want to do. And they may not even know right now what it is that they want to do.
Yeah, what an asset you are to this community. So it's great to have you. That you're willing to share everything.
Oh, yeah.
Had instead of almost like keeping it tied up. So
oh, yeah, yeah.
So who helped shape you as maybe the person or psychologist you are today? It could be a couple of people. It could be one specific person. Do you have someone in mind?
You know, as I was looking over the questions and stuff, that's the one I left blank. Partly because I think that, you know, we are made up of all the people that we come across. We're made up of our, you know, early childhood experiences, our educational experiences. Definitely being able to have some of the early experiences in playing ball. I had, you know, my mom was someone who supported me doing whatever I wanted to do. On one hand, that wasn't so good. On the other hand, that it was helpful. I had her, you know, supporting me to do things that, you know, I saw other parents not doing. So, you know, I think that there's not one person that really stands out. My grandparents both were educators. And so from the time I was real young, I had them in my life. And my grandfather was a quiet man who was also, he was a guidance counselor at high school. And then he taught English. So that's why, you know, when I teach and I tell people, I know English, you know, so, you know, but I think one of the biggest things about him was he was quietly supportive. And the coolest thing, a memory, is that when I graduated high school, I earned the same honor that he did when he graduated in high school, and that was the Rotary Scholar Athlete. And so he presented that to me. And so it's those kind of things that, you know, a big influence. There was no one that said, hey, do psychology, you know, and I think maybe like other people, I had other family members saying, what are you doing? Why are you in school so long? You know, some family members saying, don't you know enough already? So I think it just comes from a lot of different people and a lot of different fabric in the life, you know, that you live. It just gets woven together.
That's awesome to hear that. It was just like so many moments that shaped you instead of, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. having that one person that you were like, I can, but it's like everyone you came in contact with had some impact to where you are today.
Yeah. And I think that that's the thing is that when people are looking at, you know, looking for a mentor or a role model, it's recognizing the simplicity of everyday people that you see and that you interact with, you know, and how just observing them and seeing how they carry out their business and, you know, kind of taking that with you and then, you know, letting it kind of weave your own self together and, you know, be able to determine what you want from that.
So we've talked a little bit about your work and we know you're passionate about your work and what you're excited to do. What are your values and how do you like incorporate them into your career now?
Well, I think one of the biggest values that I have is kind of social justice. It literally from the time I was young, why can't people do things that they want to do? And why can't people be treated with respect just because they're human? And from the time I was very little and not being allowed to do things. And, you know, I have a minuscule amount of what that feels like for other people in our world. And so I think that really stuck with me. I went to an undergrad that was very much focused on social justice and had the first peace studies program in the country. And so that has been a value that has just always been with me is, you know, can't we all get along? How do we respect each other? How do we, you know, accept other people and allow them to be who they are without judgment? So that's one of the huge things. And I think, you know, my my work has I've done a lot of public service work because that's just where I really have passion. So that's one of my biggest values. I think one of the other ones is integrity. I think it's just really, really important to do the right thing when nobody's looking, to be able to, you know, lay your head down at night and know that you've done the very best you could, even if you've made mistakes that day, that, you know, own up to your mistakes, hold yourself accountable, you know, so that way you can learn from them. But I think that's another thing that for me has always been important. I think the last one is sportsmanship. you know, I'm a gamer from way back as far as playing ball and teamwork, and I play team sports mostly. And so that aspect of getting along with people and working with people that you may not like, and tolerating people that you don't like, and how can we pull together? And so that's just been a value for me for my whole life. And in most things that I do is how can we pull people together, you know, and accept people for where they are and help all of us move forward.
Yeah, that's really awesome. It's funny to like thinking about even when I was a kid, like playing teams where I played sports throughout college as well.
Yeah.
But those little impacts of like sportsmanship and learning them at such a young age and how much they can impact you into your adult life. And you
exactly.
don't realize it then, but then now
yeah.
you're in aspects where you're
yeah.
having to navigate working with other people that
yeah.
you may not see eye to eye with, but figuring that
yeah.
out. I think that's huge with sportsmanship. So I'm glad you brought that up, because not many
yeah.
people will refer back to it.
Yeah. I think that, you know, I see kids today that are so into one sport and so headstrong into, I got to learn all these techniques and skills, that I think that we've kind of lost our focus on what sportsmanship teaches to kids, teens, adults, everyone. And that you're right. When, you know, when we reflect back on our experiences and think, wow, that's where I developed some of those skills. That's where I developed tolerating people that I didn't really, you know, care for. They didn't care for me, but you know what? Between the lines, we played together. Mm-hmm. So that's just kind of been an ongoing value for me for since I was yay high.
Yeah, no, I love that you said that. Like it strikes with me. So I'm sure it'll strike with any of our other listeners today that uh-huh. may have played sports or just did group work and
yeah, group work. I was also
things like
yeah,
that.
I was involved in band. I was involved in art club. I was involved in, you know, these things where, you know, that connection with people and learning how to be with people is huge. So yeah. we could talk about that forever.
I think we could both just keep going in circles. With
yeah.
That.
Yeah.
All right. So tell us a little bit about your life away from work. Like what does AJ enjoy to do besides hang out on a beach?
Yes. I am at the beach in Kentucky, as always, those that see me on Zoom, it's the same beach. It's wonderful. I don't get a chance to travel a lot other than, I have had more with some conferences and things. What I enjoy doing is, I like art and I like writing, and I don't make enough time for that for myself. I'm a member of, it's called All Art and Soul Studio down in Nashville, where there's a group of folks that get together and really look at how do you become the best you through your art and music and writing and movement and things like that. And so actually this weekend I'll be heading to Nashville and I'm teaching we're having a demo day. And so I'm teaching a jelly printing class kind of goes right into my I used to call myself an artistic intellectual jock, and so not a lot of people in my little club, but more so than I knew, because, you know, finding that tribe of folks that really, you know, helps you to be you and brings the best out in you and is there for you. So I love doing the art and the writing. I also love watching sports. Anybody who knows me knows that, you know, ESPN is one of my national news networks. And, you know, we just came through March. I'm trying to catch up on my sleep from March Madness. The Masters was great. You know, I played golf and, you know, so I enjoy doing that type of thing. I enjoy cooking also. So it's just that creative nature, I think. So just a variety of things keep me busy. I don't know that I've ever been bored a day in my life, because my thought is there's something that can be done.
I love that thought. And I love that you can never be bored a day in your life. There's
yeah,
always something
yeah.
out there that you can learn.
Yeah.
You can learn something new every day.
Yeah,
that's
actually.
I try to say.
Yeah. And that's the thing is that, you know, we can get ourselves stuck in thinking that I need to work on this one thing better and better and better. But then we get kind of burnt out on that, or it keeps us, we get frustrated with it, and that creates avoidance. And that avoidance then keeps us from doing other things. And so if I'm frustrated with doing an art project, then I may shift. And I started I'm doing a vertical garden this year, and I've never grown seeds or anything like that. So I've got seeds in my bedroom. And of course the neighbors, I don't know what they think I'm growing, but you know, that's there. And so it's just, I'm a constantly, well, what about that? And let's try this. And I think, you know, from the time I was a little kid, just, you know, very curious and, you know, wonder if I could do that.
I love that. I do. So what do you think your colleagues or your friends might describe you as?
Oh,
besides,
you know,
being an artistic intellectual jock.
Well, some of them may not know the artistic part, you know, but you know, as I was looking at that, I was like, okay, I think they would think that I'm compassionate. I think they would describe me as compassionate, because I hope that that is something that people not just see, but feel, you know, from me. I think the other thing is that that I have a strong work ethic, that if somebody is needing some assistance or somebody is struggling with something, that I think they would say that if they called me, I would be there and be, you know, able to help problem solve. May not be able to fix it, but help problem solve. So I think they would also say that I talk a lot and I have a sense of humor.
I think I can agree with all of those things.
I know, I know.
For quite a few years now, like, you are very compassionate and you're always there to lend a helping hand whenever we need it. So we appreciate that here at KPA.
I'm sure
your colleagues appreciate that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So is there anything in your career that you still hope to accomplish? Like, is there a goal set out there that you're like, I'm going to get there one day and it's coming? Is there anything, or have you already reached that goal?
Well, you know, I'm one of those people that goals have changed either by my own doing or by situations, health, those kind of things. And so I don't really, there's not one big thing career-wise. The one thing that I do want to do, and I guess I'll, you know, speak it into the universe, is that I've been taking some writing seminars and things like that, and wanting to write like a memoir or autobiography, because I think that I've had an interesting life. I don't know that others might find it interesting, but it's something that, just wanting to do that. And I think some of it is just for myself, to demonstrate to myself that, hey, look what we've been through. How have you overcome it? You know, underdog achieves kind of thing. And I think a lot of people, especially now, need to know that life isn't always perfect, and you have, you know, detours and playing out barriers that you don't know how you're going to get over or around, but that, you know, if you keep going, that somehow, some way, things will work out. And so I guess that's kind of that far off goal, is that, you know, if this kid from a rural town can, you know, do some of the things that I wanted to do, then I think other people who have experienced similar kinds of backgrounds would enjoy something like that. So I don't know, that almost sounds kind of selfish to me, but.
No, it sounds like you want to share your story and how it impacted, obviously, your life, and then maybe it might impact someone else.
Yeah, yeah. So that's kind of the goal. I just have to figure out, in my semi-retiring, when the writing fits in between the art and the teaching and the curriculum development and the presenting and, you know, KPA. And
it doesn't sound like you're semi-retiring to me.
Come on now, work with me on that.
Like you're a Sheila Schuster retiring almost.
I take that as a huge compliment, because she is someone who I have looked up to since I was in KPA.
That's
everything
awesome
that she has done and continues to do. So
yes.
Yeah, that my semi-retiring, I think, will always be semi-retiring.
So are there any, like, obviously you're doing all of this art and stuff on the side, this mm-hmm. potential writing, are there any side projects or like pro bono work that you do maybe in your work field or outside of that, maybe your social justice passion? Is there something that you're doing, you know, outside, side hustle wise?
Well, I do, matter of fact, in October, I'm speaking in Wisconsin. A good friend of mine is involved in a human trafficking agency to support victims of human trafficking. And so we're working on training medical providers to understand trauma-informed care. And so, you know, when people ask me to do some of those kinds of things, I'm like, yeah, I'll be there. Because that is, in my mind, that's part of me. I need that to be able to give back and help others. And it is so, I was the president of the board for the Advocacy and Support Center, the Children's and Adults Rape and Crisis Center in our region for a while. And so I've done that kind of thing. And it's just, it's important to me to be able to give back and in any way. But those are the kinds of things that I'm really passionate about doing. And I don't know if they're a side hustle or if it just kind of goes into what I do. I'm one of those people that, you know, if there's a cause that I believe in, I'm going to help. So
that's really awesome that you're still continuing to give back. I think that's helpful for this community, that a lot of people just, they get kind of stuck in their work realm and then they don't have the opportunity or find the opportunity to give back. So I'm glad that you're able to do so. That's doing is super impactful.
Yeah, I think that you know, having been in, you know, during my full-time working, because this is retirement, you know, during my full-time working, I typically had two or three jobs, you know, like many people doing, you know, a full-time, part-times, you know, that kind of stuff, teaching. And you don't feel like you have a lot of time to give back. And so, you know, I would just, you know, encourage people to find one thing that you can do to give back without beating yourself up for not having time. But what is one thing that you can do? And my thing has always been just be kind to whoever you meet. That's giving back.
I think that's huge and impacts every like everyone you experience, whoever passing the grocery store.
Yes, exactly.
Groceries.
Exactly.
Toll booth. You never know how
exactly
is gonna reflect to them.
Yeah. And that is huge. That's a huge give back. And you know, we all are busy. We all have, you know, a lot of things going on. Not, you know, I don't know that anybody in the world these days has an easy life. It's just, I think that if we can give back by being kind, just, you know, say a nice word. Reminds me of what my Grammy would say. My granny would just say, hey, pay it forward.
I 100% agree. So we're slowly wrapping up. This mm-hmm. conversation has gone very quickly, but it's been super insightful and I think you're great. What way do you think psychologists are making the world a better place?
Well, I think that they're making the world a better place because they're understanding how people and systems work. I think the bottom line is we have to understand how we think and work and feel in order to A, understand ourselves first, and then be able to help, you know, understand others and help others understand themselves. So I think that, you know, when I see all of the variety of things that psychologists are doing now, it really excites me because, you know, we're stepping outside of the box. Especially when I think of being able to work with PTs and OTs and docs and stuff, that hasn't been a possibility at the level that we're able to do that. And so I think I love the new energy of the young group of psychologists and students that are coming up that have this this real desire to look at how can they work together? How can they make this all come together and not just think of being a psychologist and doing private practice or public service? Not that those are important, but what else do we need to do? Because doing what we have done is not working anymore. And so the new energy and the new thoughts, and even though some of us older folks will say, we didn't used to do it that way, I think that's okay. That's okay. And so I think, you know, I really think psychologists are, they are, and I think have the capacity to lead the charge to change how communities look at health. That, you know, healthcare is, I teach a biopsychosocial model of healthcare. You know, mental health is health. We can't remove it. And so I see the new psychologists, just the way they are understanding the world, see the interconnections, whereas, you know, folks in my era, very separate. And so I think that's one of the cool things about psychology.
Well, that's a super saying. Yeah, it's not just mental health and physical health. Health right. is all one thing, and it's all encompassing. Yeah. So it's glad to see that, like you said, like everyone is focusing on the health. That was one aspect that you mentioned, but I think that's super.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, one, the holistic healthcare. It's not, you know, in the past people were like, you know, that's not scientific. It's not a medical model. Well, if we take a step back and look at what our medical model has created in terms of our health, all we have to do is look at the pandemic and the unfortunate realities of the health of our nation.
Mm-hmm. So you quickly just touched on the pandemic. So how do you think psychology has changed since COVID, since the pandemic?
Well, I think that a lot of things. I think it's changed in a lot of different ways. First of all, I think it has pointed out to the public in general how important mental health can be, but also how much stigma there still is to getting help, and also how much stigma there still is for government agencies, supporters to fund psychology. We talk a whole lot about wanting more mental health providers, more care, but when, you know, the rubber meets the road, we don't have the support of funding. We don't have the support of student loan repayment. We don't have, you know, that kind of stuff. We're asking students to, you know, go into a profession where they owe more money than they'll make in the first 2 to 3 years of their career, you know, and so that kind of thing. I think the silver lining is that became more well known to everybody. I had friends who, you know, one's a dentist and, you know, one's a business person. And it's like, I didn't even know that there weren't enough of you guys. And, you know, they just don't know. And when it hits them close and they try to find somebody for help, then, you know, I get a call and, you know, where are all the people? And I'm like, well, now that's part of the problem. And so I think the pandemic has made that very clear to more people that services are needed. We don't have enough of them. We don't have enough funding. I think one of the positive things is the very quickly being able to go to telehealth. I know that I had worked in positions where, my gosh, you couldn't even have a laptop. You didn't have a laptop. And if you had one at work, you could not do it. Take that home. It was, you know, or you could not even count a phone call you know, you talked to somebody after hours that was in a crisis or, you know, whatever that is. And so I think the reality of telehealth, telemedicine is huge. I think we're still in the processes of figuring out when and how much and where and you know, all of the details that go into it. But I think on one hand, the pandemic was horrific. On the other hand, it pushed us forward in technology and using some of these things that we had, but being humans, we were afraid to jump in and make that change. And so when push came to shove, we had to do something. And so I'm always one to go, well, let's try something. We can tweak it as we go, but let's try something. And so that's one of the things about the pandemic that I think, you know, that silver lining. I think the other thing that I'm seeing, I see some young adults and teens, and just the traumatic effect of the pandemic on the teens and you know, probably the, you know, tweens to 25, you know, population, and thinking that their schooling and being homeschooled, not necessarily, but being, you know, school online and that kind of stuff didn't have an effect, or that, well, at least they got their courses, at least they got credits, at least, you know, yes, they did, but, you know, just myself and some of the clients that I'm seeing and just seeing across the world in the research and that kind of stuff is how much damage that has done to psychological functioning of our young adults, and that, you know, we are having, it's kind of like a tsunami coming together with, you know, we have an increase in suicide rates, we have an increase in, you know, acting out behaviors, we have an increase in substance use, we have an increase in family struggles, and then, you know, we have such a decrease in funding for mental health. We have no providers. We have, so it's like this whole thing coming together. And so I think that the pandemic really kind of peeled back some of those layers of what was, you know, what we knew in the profession, in the helping profession, the mental health profession, we knew, but now it's out there. And I'm hoping that we get some support with that, but it's a one day at a time, one step at a time, you know, and keep working on it. It's not something that's going to come, you know, just quickly. So.
Yeah, no. So you briefly touched on one of your answers to that. So you said there weren't enough providers. Mm-hmm, so what advice would you give to someone who is teeter-tottering between their psychology career and, you know, as you said, your path wasn't linear. So what advice would you give to someone that's like, should I keep going to psychology or the motivation to stay with it?
Yeah. You know, I thought about that and I thought, well, I wish I had some, you know, crystal ball magic answer that would, you know, hey, this is going to get more people, into psychology, into mental health professions. This is going to help us. I think the biggest thing is people need to spend some time and learn about themselves first. I liken that to, you know, when you're riding in the airplane, put your own oxygen mask on first. I think too many times we're looking at what other people want from us, especially when we're young and young adults and even early careers. You know, you've had an idea and then you get caught up on a treadmill of let's go. And, you know, and I think sometimes people haven't had an opportunity to just stop. And what is it that they really want? You know, I think taking good care of themselves. I think discovering who they are. And then if you do that, then you're more able to be there for others as you continue on in the field. And so I think that what we have to do as psychologists is to help youngsters, you know, down to middle school, high school, to be able to understand the value of psychology. And that it is present all around them, and that they can be a part of understanding that further, and that there are a variety of things that they can do. I think that we can't expect undergrads to just, you know, okay, I'm going to stick with psychology, because when you look at some of the statistics of, okay, here's how much money you're going to make, and here's this, and here's that, you know, that can be kind of scary. But I think if we help the younger kids really understand what psychology is and how it is so valuable in our lives. And it helps make not just ourselves be able to understand our world, but us to understand our world too. So I think it goes back to education and training, but moving it down the pipeline, because we have a lot of, I don't want to say competition, because I think everybody has to find what works for them. And I think that's why I go back to, you got to find what works for you. And that may not come in a linear fashion, as we've talked. But I think that helping people know what options there are. I love the fact that they're doing STEM work. I think that's amazing. I think that that's helping a lot of people know different things that they can do. I like that they've done some STEAM work where they have included art in that. But I also think that, you know, being able to look at social emotional learning. I've done presentations to schools, teachers, and actually middle school students about understanding pain and how they can do that. And they are so, you know, chomping at the bit to know things, but you have to meet them where they are and help them, empower them to know some things instead of just trying to stand and tell them, okay, here's what you have to do. You have to do this test and you have to do this and you got to jump through this. It's like, what do you want to do? You know, and providing different avenues for that. So I don't know. I could go on and on forever about that. I think we need to have kids have more free time to be able to explore who they are and not be as scheduled. But I also love the opportunities that come from scheduled activities. So there's no easy way to talk to people about how do you get involved in psychology and how do you stay involved. It's my hope is that people take the time to know themselves, because that is more important to me. Because once you know yourself, then you're better able to then help others once you stay in the field.
Yeah, that's a really awesome answer. And I don't think anyone's answered the question like that, is saying find yourself first.
Yeah.
And then I think you'll find the right path for your career. I think you're really taking that, you know, inward look and then being able to show what you can do as an outward projection.
Yeah. It all, you know, it's an inside job. You know, we hear that. And you know, I have the benefit of a few decades, several decades under my belt. And, you know, being able to do that. And I think my experiences of just growing up in different kinds of life experiences has allowed me to be, on one hand, take advantage of my curious nature, because I think a lot of psychologists are curious people to begin with, because we want to know how things tick. We want to know, you know, well, why is that? What's this? You know, and so just allow that curiosity to bloom and find it, be curious first about yourself, you know, put that oxygen mask on you first.
Get a bumper sticker, stay curious.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So I have one last question for you that was not on the list.
Uh-oh.
So this is going to be on.
Yeah. You didn't want me to prepare.
I did not. If you had to perform karaoke tomorrow night, what would be your go-to song?
Okay, so I'm old. It would be a Neil Diamond song, and it would be I Am, I Said.
There you go.
And it's a song that most people who, you know, don't know Neil Diamond don't know that song. You know, I would probably sing a Sweet Caroline in there too, because, you know, that's that. But I Am, I Said.
Sweet Caroline always gets the crowd going.
I know. So, you know, I don't sing well, but I'm always up for gamemanship.
Yes. Karaoke is one thing you don't have to sing well, but you just have to have fun.
Yeah. You know, I can talk loud and pretend like I'm singing. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, that wraps up our episode today. So thank you, Dr. Steele, for being on the podcast today. And is there any way that people can find you, reach out to you? We'll include all this in the show notes, but if you want to give a quick shot of where people can contact you or find you.
I'm basically, I am not, it, since I'm semi-retired, member. I don't have a lot of the LinkedIn and all of that kind of stuff, but my old fashioned email of drajsteele@aol.com. It still works. And so it's available there. And I'm also with the Evidence in Motion folks. And so that's another one. It's EIM and EIM.com or something. I don't know. But yeah, always available.
Awesome. All right. Again, thank you for having or being on the podcast today, and hope everyone enjoyed this episode. Thanks.